This is the Rude Awakening Show on demand.
Coach is in. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Good morning to Dude.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you? Man?
I know. With a heavy heart, you come in today because you were like the biggest Prince fan ever.
I love Prince, man. I always love Prince.
Yeah.
And he was my go-to guy. You know, him, Prince, Rick James, Lemmy. These are very important people to me, man. And Jimi Hendrix, and you know, I wasn't around to be sad.
Is there anybody alive that you like?
I was just thinking about it now. I don't know. I really don't know.
All your musical.
I'm afraid to say anybody.
Careful.
Might be a bad
You're like
omen.
The Deadpool.
Yeah, I don't really like anybody or anything in that respect. You know.
Wow.
It's freaky. It's sad. It's unexpected for me.
Very, very sad news. Yeah, man. I heard that news yesterday, and I just kind of felt like, wow, you know? I mean, that was a big part of my growing up music-wise. I mean, I listened to a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have some vinyl here that you pulled from my office, and one of the albums, his first one, For You.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you know, I remember working at the record store when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, it was...
Purple Rain, it's integral part of American life after the 80s, I think, you know, in every respect, from anybody you talk to, pretty much all across the board, everybody loves Prince.
Yeah, I mean, there was nobody that, I hate that guy.
No, and he was very eccentric and that kind of thing, but he pushed the boundaries for music, for fashion, and not to mention all the people that he got started, Morris Day and the Time. Sheila E.
Yeah, Apollonia.
Apollonia, you know, the list goes on and on. Writing songs for people.
Today, later on in the show today, we're actually going to speak with a three-time Grammy winner, Bob Yesbeck, who worked and recorded with Prince.
Cool.
So, yeah, so he worked with him. And
that's awesome.
We'll speak with him.
I cannot wait to hear that.
Yeah. We have Bob Yesbeck, three-time Grammy award-winning producer. Bob Yesbeck, it just sounds so good when you say three-time Grammy Award-winning.
I don't know why he doesn't lead with that.
Yeah, I would too. Matter of fact, I would have that on my cell phone. Is it like when the message shows up?
Oh, yeah.
Like that's how it would say. As a matter of fact, I may change it in my phone. From now on, that's how it's showing up, three-time Grammy winner. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Bulldog and guys. How are you?
We're doing well. And
I'm changing my ringtone even as you speak.
I think you should. I like that. It has a ring to it.
Yeah.
Yes. So now you did work with Prince.
I did work with Prince. I was fortunate enough to work with him back in 88, 89 when they were doing the Batman album with the Danny Elfman score for the Batman movie.
Okay, and a lot of people know your studio. Dude, I mentioned your studio, Omega Studios. That was your studio, and Dude was like, what?
Yeah, man. I'm a huge Bad Brains fan, and I think that's probably one of the better ones. The Omega Sessions, that's some good stuff, dude.
Yeah, then there's a long story behind that I won't tell now, but a very interesting story. You know, they were one of the very, very first punk bands to come out, and it was the only punk band that anybody had ever seen that had any African-American guys in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very interesting. And those tapes sat for almost a year before they put out, I mean, a lot more than a year, probably 4 or 5 years before the Omega Sessions album finally went out. I think several lawyers sent their kids to Harvard on the money that they charged because of the lawsuits around that album.
Wow.
Wow. See, you have so many damn stories. And stop keeping them quiet.
Yeah,
really.
Man. Wow.
Why don't you just come here and tell... We're going to do the Omega Session stories here live on...
Well, that would be fun. Yeah. That was an interesting session. I'll take up about 1 second of your time. You know, when we're doing a recording session, we can isolate every instrument, every voice while they're singing or playing. And I went into the control room while they were doing a vocal session for the Bad Brains album. And I said to the engineer, I said, I can't understand what he's saying. You have the guitars too loud. You have this and that. So I leaned over his shoulder, and it's called solo. I pressed the button to isolate the voice, and I still couldn't understand what he was saying.
No way. Oh, it's awesome.
That's pretty funny. That's really funny. All right, let's get into the Prince stories, though. What is your memories or experiences working with Prince?
It was so interesting. Prince was doing a 2 or 3 night concert series at the Capitol Center, right outside of D.C. in a little town called Largo, Maryland. And it was one of the first huge venues where they used to have music. And he was booked to do that, but he was also under a lot of pressure to finish this Batman album because they wanted to release the album simultaneously with the movie. So he booked the studio for 3 nights on the nights of the concerts, which means that he didn't even show up at the studio till around 12:30, 1 o'clock a.m. A concert had to end, and they had to do what they needed to do, and then a limo had to drive them all the way from Largo, which is in southern Maryland, around the Beltway to my studio, which is in Rockville. And he came in. It was very interesting because one of the requirements that they had, Prince isn't an engineer. He's very, very creative, but he really wasn't interested in the engineering side of things, though he owned his own studio, Paisley Park, for years. So they requested that we label with little tiny stickies, that we label every control that he would have to use in order to make his own changes in the sound. So, for example, Prince's reverb, Prince's equalization, a compression ratio on Prince voice, Prince level. And he was working with Sheena Easton at the time, so we had to do the same thing for them. So I remember my $650,000 console in the room, which is 30 feet wide, with about 2,000 buttons and controls and knobs on it, with these little weird little round dots all over it.
Like it's a yard sale.
Like a yard sale. It's like, hey, if you want this knob, mark it now, you know? You can have this knob, you know? Take this fader. We don't care. And so it was great, but he could not have been more friendly and soft-spoken and quiet. It was so interesting in those days. I was thinking about it because, you know, nowadays when people record, they either record to a hard disk or even to an SD card, you know. I mean, right. You could literally put it in your shirt pocket. But back in those days, we had these 2-inch tapes. They were 2-inch wide reels of tape, and each reel was 16 inches in diameter. So each one of these things weighed about 25, 30 pounds. And they rolled in 4 anvil cases that were 6 feet tall. Anvil cases being these big road cases like right. The bands use, you know, the big black cases with the with all the metal fittings and corners. They rolled these things in and they were full of tapes.
Wow.
Absolutely full of tapes, because what the way a lot of people recorded back in those days and still do, but it's not as complicated, is they would do different parts of the songs on different reels and at different takes on different days, and then they would be edited together later on.
Interesting
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. It was very similar.
The old days.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said the old days of recording. That's when it was really the real deal. Like that.
Oh, it was the real deal, man. I'm talking heavy hardware.
Yeah.
It was funny. You know, people always ask me, well, what was that album recorded on? What software did they use? I say, software. Yeah, right. The only software we had was Word Perfect, so we could write a letter to somebody. So, we had big, big machines. I had 4 of them. They cost me about $80,000 each. A Studer A800s was the machines. They were made in Germany. Very, very precision tape machines that shuttled that tape around and allowed us to record different tracks for them. And while Prince just sat there kind of very quietly leaning forward and listening and being very creative.
Well, and that kind of goes to show like the hope for the future with Prince's music. I mean, if that's just the one, you're talking about one instance with the Batman album, that many tapes. And they mentioned the man lived in a recording studio. Paisley Park is his house. It's his recording studio. The tapes that are going to come out from here on out for probably the next 10, 20, 30 years, it's probably a massive amount of material to go through.
And you know, it's also going to be a boom for any recording studios who were smart enough. And actually, the guy that I sold Omega Studios to has a lot of wisdom, and he kept all that machinery. And people will come in and say, are you able to mount this tape on the machine so we can do something? And he'll say yes, because a lot of people said, oh, well, we're getting rid of that stuff. We're going to just use a laptop, you know. Well, that was a big mistake on a lot of people's part, because imagine the tapes that are going to need to be remixed and outtakes that he never used mm-hmm. and things that nobody has ever heard is on those tapes.
Hey, Bob, just between me and you, if you need it, I have an 8-track recorder. Here.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. You mean the little cartridge thing?
Yes, the 8-tracks. In case we need an 8-track player, if anything's left there, we have one.
That's good. Thank you. I mean, we can always tell people that we have that format available
right.
down here.
And I have a book of matches that I could jam it in to keep it from to keep it stable.
I can think of a lot better use for that book of matches with that machine.
All right, I want to talk more about your print stories, but Jeff, good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Jeff Osias?
Nice to hear you guys.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing, man?
A whole other life from the food guy, huh?
Yes, it's a whole different world we're opening up.
Yep.
And
yeah.
Again, we don't call that anymore. He's now known as 3-time Grammy Award winner.
I concur with you. I'm not going to mention the F word with him anymore. I just wanted to kind of comment about Prince and what an immensely talented guy he was. And, you know, it's a terrible loss. I was looking through some stuff he did. I think it was a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame thing, maybe. But he's playing with Pete Winwood and Donnie Harrison, George Harrison's son. And that's probably enough to YouTube it. It's like a 6-minute video.
Okay.
And the last 2 minutes, Prince does a guitar solo that is, I hate to say the best because there's no such thing, but it's pretty damn impressive.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
I know he's a musician, but you just don't realize how great a guitar player he was.
Oh, he's right.
Great. So, guitar.
Masterful guitar player, man.
All right, Jeff, thanks. I'm going to get back to my 3-time Grammy Award winner friend, Bob. Okay.
See you, Jeff. Bob, bye. Nice to hear your voice, buddy.
Nice talking to you, Jeff. Take care, man.
See you.
All right, be good.
Bye. All right, 3-time Grammy Award winner friend, Bob. So now, you guys, didn't you have some story you guys were hanging out or playing ping pong or pool or something with Prince? What did you do with him?
Well, when the studio, my studio was, and actually still is, as I said, I sold it back in the early 90s, and it's being very ably run. We had kind of a little area, like a lounge area, and there were video games back there. Sometimes people would roll in a ping pong table. There wasn't a lot of room, so they didn't have that a lot. But yes, there were, you know, he would come in, and he was kind of tired because he had just finished this show. You could tell he'd kind of been run through the ringer, and they went, and for 3 nights, they went through the night every night. And so they would go out and we would hang out, and I had 3 engineers on the job. There was a couple times that I went in, there was other guys that were in there working on it, depending on what they were doing, cause they actually booked 2 rooms. Sheena Easton was doing, some tracks, percussion tracks in one room, and while Prince was working on guitar or something like that in another room. The studio had 4 separate studio rooms in it that work entirely separate from one another, which was very convenient.
Now, was there something, you know, I mean, you worked with, I know, everybody and big names. Was there something unique and different, or I want to say like a certain star-like, not star-like, but some kind of a special something about this guy that you didn't see with other people?
You know what struck me when he first walked in, and of course we were all very excited that he was coming, and I mean everybody, even the office staff, was still there at 1 in the morning. When he came in, he's a very, very tiny guy.
Yeah,
he isn't
five,
very
two.
Big at all, and I'm not tall by any means. I mean, I tell people 6 feet, and then I hope, you know. But as I slowly go up on my toes. Oh, yeah, I'm 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking, slim, trim, tiny, you know, but very intense. When he looked at you and talked to you, it was eye to eye. And I remembered him being very clear. We've had some people in the studio that were a problem, that were difficult, that made nuisances of themselves. And I'm talking big names who were just big pains in the you-know-what.
Okay. Come on. Now, you're not in the business anymore. You could tell. Who's somebody you would never, ever record with again?
Barbara Streisand.
Oh, yeah. All right. I can see that.
A bit of a diva?
a bit of a diva. And you know what? It's okay to be that way for creative purposes, like getting mad when someone makes a mistake or getting annoyed at an engineer. But she was just nothing but rude for rude's sake. The engineer I'd assigned to the session with her, she was doing something, and Marvin Hamlisch was conducting. It was a full orchestra. And the engineer who I assigned to it was so excited that he went out and he bought a microphone that he knew that she liked to use. Paid a lot of money for it. It was probably somewhere around $2,200-$2,300 for this mic. And at one point in the session, she got mad and turned around and threw the mic down on the ground.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
oh.
And it, of course, it didn't hurt the mic, but it's like she didn't know that, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she was... very, very difficult. Called from the limo before the session and wanted to have the hallways cleared so she didn't have to encounter anybody going from the limo into the studio. And that was when she and I had our little nose-to-nose moment. And I said, that's not going to happen, Barbara. There's other people recording here, and you will come in like a regular client. It was nice because she wasn't my client. It was Warner Brothers or someone that was the client, so I could say anything I wanted to her, and it didn't matter.
But on the opposite end of the spectrum, Prince was just a gentleman and nice and polite and awesome to work with.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know who he reminded me of in terms of being friendly, even though he wasn't as funny, was Elton John. When we had Elton John at the studio, he's a funny guy and kind of self-deprecating. He was doing the Reg Strikes Back album, and they were doing the release party there, and he played live and everything. And there are some rather funny stories that we have about him being there. And it was just everybody just – it was just like one of the guys, you know, sitting there with his feet up on the console laughing. And there was probably some activities that went on, possibly, you know, possible chemical activities that we can't possibly discuss on the air.
Of course not. Now we're gonna have to talk more about these stories at some point because your stories go on and on. But I just, you know, the connection to Prince, I just think that's pretty cool. You did have a connection, and I'm glad to hear he is nothing but awesome.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, nothing but awesome. That's a very good term for it. Everybody who works at the studio and some of the guys who are still working there were working there then. I'm sure all of them remember this moment.
I bet.
I'm sure they do. All right, my three-time Grammy Award-winning friend, Bob.
Awesome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Nice talking to you.
And that's exactly the way you're going in the phone. I'm changing the other name. You're going
to no. I'll never live it down. Never.
And then when you next time you call them and say, hey, who's calling? They'll be, I don't know, says three-time Grammy Award-winning friend, Bob. I don't know.
I know. Bob, who are these people?
He'll purposely not answer.
Bob Yezbeck.
That's right.
Thanks, man. I will talk to you soon.
Take care, guys. Nice talking to you.
Likewise. See ya.
Bye-bye.
This is the Rude Awakening Show on demand.